No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, your fan run slash media run, you know, inside and outsider perspectives, like you heard in the intro, covering the Arizona Cardinals, talking Arizona Cardinals, and we live and breathe Arizona Cardinals. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, part of the USA Today sports media group, NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds, the Arizona Cardinals site, and he's also one of the hosts of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, it felt kind of weird this last weekend, didn't it, with no Cardinals playing in the playoffs, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was kind of bittersweet. You and I text a little bit about it, and this is looking at how bad these teams were that lost this weekend. You have to be even more upset, I think, with what happened to the Arizona Cardinals this year. You're telling me they weren't one of the 16 best teams in the NFL this year? Like, those two teams that lost this weekend were better than the Cardinals? I don't buy it. It's frustrating that that's what happened, but it is what it is at this point, and you just kind of shrug your shoulders because you and I and most of the fans, maybe still belligerently, but we still believe and know that this Cardinals team could have done more and done some damage in the playoffs had they gotten in, and instead we had to be subjected to watching, you know, a bad Detroit team and a bad New York Giants team play against what I wouldn't call great Seattle or Green Bay teams.
And that's what we're going to talk about. We're basically in off-season mode. Obviously, the Cardinals aren't in the playoffs. And there's lots of offseason coming up. If you caught our last show, we graded the positions and we gave out our offseason awards. So you catch up on the latest episode, our latest show from last week. We're recording on a Tuesday night, and we're going to talk about essentially three things. We're going to take advantage. We're going to jump on the NFL playoff bandwagon, but we're going to talk about the playoffs in terms of looking at it from the Cardinals lens. A little bit of what Seth was talking about and what it means moving forward for the Cardinals, maybe a little bit of who we're rooting for. Then we're going to talk about, for those of you who pay attention to the college football world, we had one heck of a game between Clemson and Alabama, which, you know, the ending was fantastic. If you are a Dynasty fan, then you were disappointed. If you were a fan of the underdog, and if you're a fan of fast finishes, well, you got three, you know, game-changing touchdowns or you know, potentially game-winning touchdowns, three of them in like the last 3 minutes of the game. We're going to talk about, since the Cardinals have a high pick, you know, who are the players that maybe would look good in Cardinal red on playing on Sundays this next season? And we'll close. We'll actually talk about the Cardinals. This is being a Cardinals show. We'll look at each position area. We'll look at each position group, and we'll talk about offseason needs. We don't necessarily. We're not going to break down free agency and the contracts. Well, we will bring. We'll bring up who's up for a new contract and who's not. But what do they need looking ahead to 2017? In each particular position group, that is. So that's what's on tap for tonight's episode or today's edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. But before we get started, I want to let you know about Blue Apron, one of the supporters of the show. This episode is brought to you by BlueApron.com. You know, if you're like me and my family and Seth's family, time is not something that we have a whole lot about. We don't have a ton of time. So when it comes to cooking dinner, we all want to cook dinner. We all want fresh food. We want to eat well. But oftentimes it's a very difficult thing to do with our hectic schedules, and we don't want to eat out every night. So Blue Apron is a possibility for you can do that, because using fresh, high-quality ingredients, they ship meals for you to prepare home-cooked meals at home. They ship them to your home every week. And for less than $10 per meal, some really great recipes. I have my first meals coming this weekend. I'm expecting some, I think it's chipotle mushroom enchiladas and some salmon and something. So really fresh, high quality foods that you can prepare at home at a reasonable price. And that way you don't have to eat out all the time. In 30 to 40 minutes, you could have yourself a high quality home cooked meal. Now, for the Rise Up Sea Redfish listeners, you can check out this week's menu. So head on over to blueapron.com/red. That's right, red, R-E-D for the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. So blueapron.com/red. Check it out, and you can check out what's on this week's menu, and you'll get your first three meals free with free shipping. You'll love how good it feels, how it tastes, and to create home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Head on over. That's blueapron.com/red. It's a better way to cook and a better way to eat. So let's go ahead and get started with what we're going to do now. Let's talk about the playoffs. Now, as you were watching the playoffs, now for me, I didn't really enjoy the weekend. There was really only one game that I cared about, and that was the Seahawks game and the Lions.
Wait.
Stupid Lions. Now, here's what I want to talk about, because the buzz around the NFL and around Seattle is because of the performance of Thomas Rawls that the Seahawks are back. They found the replacement for Marshawn Lynch. Rawls rolled all over they looked good. They really did. They looked dominant against a Lions team that was just overmatched. And I think as the end of the season with the playoff loss, I think it was four straight losses. A team that many people felt was a fluke all year. What did you get out of that game? And did you get the impression that Seattle's all the way back? Because I'm going to hesitate to say that just based on that game.
Yeah, I don't see it, if we're being honest. Like, I don't see the, oh, they're back type thing. What I see is that they took advantage, like good teams do. They took advantage of a flawed Detroit Lions team that, let's be honest. I mean, Matthew Stafford turned into Carson Palmer of 2015. I mean, he went from MVP candidate to I don't even know. Did he break the finger, fracture the finger? He hurt the middle finger on his throwing hand, and he's basically turned into Drew Stanton. I mean, that's the transformation that he underwent. If you look at the numbers, they brought him up during the game on Saturday night. And I mean, he went from like 25 to 2 or something insane like that, touchdown to interception ratio, to like 5 to 7 or something crazy like that in his last four games. Like, he's just been abysmal, and you see it. They were out without their left tackle. They were down in the cornerback position, and a team that is not as talented at almost every position, the Lions had to play a perfect game, and they just didn't do it. And, you know, people can get upset about the officiating. It was piss poor. But in the end, it was the fact that the Lions were outmanned and outgunned. And I don't think that means that Seattle's back as much as the Lions just were a team that had been so hot early in the season that they got in by way of the way they started the season as opposed to the way they ended the season.
And for me, the Seattle team that I saw took advantage as well. Are they back? Well, we saw they didn't have a running game all season. they were terrible in the running game all season. So to say that Thomas Rawls has brought them back to the championship level, I think is premature. Especially when you note that the Lions defense was, you know, bottom half of the league in terms of rush defense. And now Thomas Rawls, I mean, he did suffer that his injury his rookie season was one that like makes you worry about the future of his career. So seeing him perform like that gives them something to think about that he's there. But, you know, the impact that Marshawn Lynch had on that offense, it can't be overstated. Thomas Rawls has talent, and if he can be consistent, he can get them to that more competitive level. But what we saw from the Seahawks this season is a vulnerable team. They are not a great offensive team, but they can put up great offensive numbers from game to game. Russell Wilson is a great quarterback, but he was hobbled much of the season. I'm not saying that they're not exactly on decline because of the talent they have. They're a very talented team. But the Cardinals, they didn't beat the Cardinals either game. So a 7-8-1 Cardinals team. This wasn't even like the whole Rams thing that they can never beat the Rams, but they couldn't beat the Cardinals this year. And we know the flaws that the Cardinals had. They gave up 34 points to a Cardinals team that had struggled with the offense most of the season. Their defense has been suspect at times. Their defense has looked much different since Earl Thomas went down. Now, that's a very important injury loss for them on the defense, especially as they go up against Atlanta this weekend. But, you know, I'm not of the opinion that Seattle's back up to a championship level. They are what they've been all season, a talented team who can steamroll teams if it gets out of hand, because they do that really well. That's one thing. They stomp on teams really well if they smell blood.
Right. That's their, you know, that's their MO. And then they kind of remind me of the Arizona Cardinals from last year in the way that when they are winning, they win big, right? Like they win in a big way. But when they're down, when they're trailing, when they're struggling, you know, you never feel necessarily like they're going to pull it off. Like you're always waiting for that one mistake. It doesn't feel like the invincibility, I guess is the best way to put it, that we've seen from them in the past. And so, you know, you sit here and you wait to see what happens next. And I think that going to Atlanta, you know, it's easy to say it, and it's probably cheap to say it now in the sense of like, oh, it'll show us who they really are. But honestly, I think it will. Like, it's going to show us whether or not they, like, even a loss, a close loss, like, they're going, you know, it's going to be one of those things where you go, wow, that was, you know, they really were back. Like, they were a competitive team again. But if they go into Atlanta and get rocked and look, you know, like they did against the Cardinals for what, 3.5 quarters of a game, and Atlanta is a better team than Arizona this year. And if they do that, then they're going to end up losing, you know, by 15 or 20, not 3 like Arizona beat them. So I think that'll tell us a lot. Obviously, if they win this game, then, you know, they're back. But I don't think is anything, you know, less than a win tells us anything outside of the fact that if they get blown out, I think they caught the right team at the right time for them. You know, if they hadn't ended the season so poorly, I think it would be a little different, right? But the way that they ended the season didn't really instill confidence in that, oh, this, you know, this Seattle team's dangerous and poised for a deep run in the playoffs. Like, that, you didn't think that watching them against Arizona.
No. And, you know, looking at that team, it's, well, the one thing that a team has to be able to do is to have a threat of a running game to be effective, to be able to move the ball offensively against the Seahawks. The Lions just couldn't. and when they had to rely on the passing game. That's where this weekend. Now Atlanta's defense is not good. They're kind of the layup line, but Seattle, you can score on them, and Atlanta's better offensively than any other team in football. They've got a great pair of running backs, and then they're going to be rested, and they have Matt Ryan in the passing game. And then we look at the other teams, the Giants, the 11 or 10 win Giants, and they never looked good all year, but they managed to beat the Cowboys. And so that's the part that's, you know, you look at the Cardinals and what they did, and it's just so frustrating because you get the feeling that they're better than the Giants. They're better than the Lions. Heck, we beat Seattle in Seattle. So they could have hung with it, you know, and that makes it that much. And it also gives you a think, you know, for those who think that the Cardinals need to rebuild, I think that's silly. One, I don't believe there's any such thing as a rebuild in the NFL anymore. And because we see teams go from worst to first, we see teams go from bad to competitive. It's just the nature of the NFL. But the Cardinals still have a boatload of talent. So they're not far off to being even legitimate contenders again. And especially with what we saw in the playoffs, the teams that were in the playoffs, and that's both AFC and NFC, and we have to feel for the Raiders because the Raiders looked like the 2014 Cardinals, and they feel like the 2014 Cardinals. You know, Connor Cook looked like Ryan Lindley out there, and you just feel bad because they were having that sort of season even for longer than what the Cardinals had in 2014 at the start of the year when Carson Palmer was on a roll. Then he got hurt. Stanton kept them on a roll. Then he got hurt. They stumbled to the finish line. Ryan Lindley plays a bad Carolina team, and the Carolina for a little while even looked like they tried to let the Cardinals win before, you know, Ryan Lindley did the Ryan Lindley things. And that was the case against the Texans. And so you see the parallels to the Cardinals. And then you also see the fact that, you know, as frustrating as this season was, they weren't that far off. And they could have been a playoff team. And you look at the teams in the play, and you're just like, they could have beat them. Green Bay? I don't know about that because they're on a roll. But, you know, I think they could have beat Seattle. They certainly would have looked better than Detroit. And I think they certainly would have looked much better than New York did against Green Bay.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And that's what, like you said, that's what's frustrating. I mean, you know, we can't talk about the AFC because that's, you know, that's not teams that obviously that's not even a road that the Cardinals could take. But you look at it, I mean, they're a better team than Oakland was, obviously. That, and like you said, that's an unfortunate reality. I mean, teams were saying the same thing in 2014 about the Arizona Cardinals. Like, oh, give Carolina a real team in the first round, not this garbage Arizona Cardinals.
Well, that was like a fake playoff game in to begin with because you had the Ryan Lindley game against a team in the Panthers that had gone 7-8-1 to get in the playoffs, or 8-7-1 to get in the playoffs. And then they were in a terrible division. So it was almost a mirror image. You had the stumbling Raiders against the terrible Texans who had a good defense, but they were only in the playoffs because they played in a division that was just horrifically bad.
Yeah, and then you look at, you know, Miami again without their starting quarterback, and it was just a kind of a dumpster fire of a weekend. You know, like you said, New York was a team that nobody believed in all season. Everybody kind of waited for them to turn on the New York thing, right? Like, oh, it's New York in the playoffs. But they just never could, and Aaron Rodgers is playing at such a special level. You know, that's the difference in you know, that's one of the things you look at. When you look at the Packers, would you say on paper, and maybe you and I are biased, you know, and we've obviously overthought this Arizona Cardinals team all season, but would you really think on paper that the Green Bay Packers team is a better team than the Cardinals? Their offensive line is better. I mean, I think that's obvious. But then the next, you know, the other thing is Aaron Rodgers just makes them so dynamic. I think Arizona has a better defense from basically top to bottom. And I could argue that the skill players for the Cardinals are better outside of maybe, you know, Jordy Nelson. So it, you know, but that's how much of a difference maker Aaron Rodgers is. And that's, you know, it's not fair to expect Carson Palmer to do that, but that's what the difference is.
And Aaron Rodgers has a deal with the devil. I'm sure of it, because how does a man in the NFL complete so many Hail Marys? It doesn't make any sense at all.
I know. And then you think at some point that teams would catch on, but I read something that was interesting, and it's that it's because he throws the ball so high. You know, most people throw it and it kind of peters out, but his ball goes far, but it travels at such a high, like such a high arc and an angle that when it comes down that, and you know, we saw it with Patrick Peterson last year, like defenders just mistime their jump. Like they can't figure out when to jump.
Or they just forget how to defend the Hail Mary. Cause anytime I've seen it, you know, knock the stupid ball down. And what does Patrick do? He decides to do something else.
Yeah.
So, and then you've got everyone in front of Randall Cobb and it just lands in his arms. How does that happen?
I'm telling you, I think a lot of it is the angle of the pass. It's just such a high, weird arc angle. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, you know, you can't expect Aaron Rodgers to be your quarterback. Like, that's just the reality of it. There's only one Aaron Rodgers in the NFL. And so for the Cardinals, you know, it had to be, everything else had to be right. And it just didn't happen this year. But like you said, you watch these games and you're like, really? Like, the Cardinals weren't better than this team. Like, you know, and you have a hard time with that. And that's what's frustrating.
No, let's move on from the playoffs. I mean, it makes me sort of sad to talk about it when they're, you know, the Cardinals aren't in it. But, you know, speaking of Aaron Rodgers, so let's talk next. We're going to talk another type of playoffs, the championship game, the Alabama-Clemson. Two teams with all sorts of talent. Next up on Rise of Sea Red, we're going to talk about the players that we were impressed with and how some of them might look in Cardinal Red. And if there are any players that perhaps could be in the mix with the 13th pick. That's next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're going to talk about Alabama-Clemson, two very talented teams with a bunch of NFL talent. Aside from a game that was just absolutely a ton of fun to watch, especially, you know, I don't have a rooting interest in either game. I kind of like the fact, I don't mind Alabama being really good. I think it's fun to see, you know, teams be good for a long time. I'm not against that, especially when they're not a rival of mine, so I don't care that much. But then you see a Clemson team, a Clemson team, which if you're a Cardinals fan, you'll notice the Cardinals have been they've kind of tapped the Clemson talent pool over the years. They've got Chandler Catanzaro, they've got Andre Ellington, they got Jerron Brown. That is a program that produces a lot of while they haven't, the past couple of years have been great. But if you look historically, they're not a great football program. They're a good football program who puts out a lot of great athletic NFL-type players. I mean, if you look across the league, there's lots of Clemson around the league in the last few years. So let's kind of – who are some of the players that for you really impressed you? I've got a couple on my mind, and I know we're both going to gush about Deshaun Watson. As I was kind of thinking, I'll think of Aaron Rodgers. Deshaun Watson, you know, is kind of that same type of player, isn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't have the arm strength. Like, that's going to be the biggest thing coming out. And you know, I think a good coach can coach around that. I've seen some Alex Smith comparisons. I think he's more willing to take risks down the field, but it's not the worst comparison in the world. So, I mean, you look at it that from that perspective. But when you look at it, you look at what this game was. I think you really saw the big dogs come out and shine. And for Clemson, I'm not a huge Mike Williams guy, but he played really well. He's a lot like Michael Floyd was coming out. Like, he's a guy that I have questions on about whether he's going to separate at the next level, whether he's going to be a guy that can make plays after the catch at the next level.
Does he even have Michael Floyd's speed? Because that's the one thing I've heard is kind of the knock on it. And Floyd, for one, had a very top end size and, you know, size and speed comp. Does Mike Williams have that?
That'll be what's interesting when he tests. He's supposed to run in the high 4.4s. So,
okay.
I mean, it'll be similar ish, but you look at it and you have to be, you know, impressed with his ability. His, you know, same thing that we always gushed about Floyd and why we always wondered why he couldn't take the next step. You know, he has the ability to time his jumps. You know, he wins those 50-50 balls. He's a guy that can really take over in that phase of the game, but he just never does it consistently. and then, you know, he wasn't great last night, but Cordrea Tankersley is another interesting player for Clemson. He's their cornerback. He's their bigger cornerback. If I remember his size right, I want to make sure I have his size right. But he's one of those, you know, he's a guy that he gets his hands on a lot of balls, and that's, you know, that's important, and it's one of the things that Justin for this offseason has really been working on to see kind of like what the way he grades him is, and that's Justin Higdon, the other half of the Draft Breakdown podcast. He's been giving them points for like how many pass breakups they have and then how many like interceptions they have, and then each one of those is worth a point, and then it's, you know, divided by how many games they played in. And so Tankersley gets his hands on a lot of footballs, and so that's, you know, that's important. They list him at 6 foot and 200 pounds, so like I said, he's a bigger corner. He's supposed to run in the low 4.4 range, so he's, you know, he's an elite athlete. Last night, you know, wasn't his best work, but I thought he played, you know, I think he's a guy that you could start to hear the name if that's the route the Cardinals want to take. I'm not sure. You and I have talked about this a little bit, but I'm not sure they're necessarily looking at cornerbacks. And then, you know, when you talk about what they got out of what's the kid's name, Wayne Gallman, I'm not a huge Wayne Gallman fan. I know some people are, but you know, he's like 6'1", and they list him at 210. He's a big back. He has nice hands, and he runs where he's supposed to, you know, which is important. And so you wonder if he's a guy that could potentially be a late round type pick to be the David Johnson backup. And that would be, you know, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, honestly. Like you have another bigger, physical, faster back. So you know, kind of watch that going forward. The kid that drew my attention the most, and Justin's told me about him, I just haven't had a chance to watch him really, was Jordan Leggett, the tight end from Clemson. You know, that's a position it seems like the Cardinals are continually trying to find youth at, right? Like they're always bringing in veterans because the youth guy didn't necessarily work out the way it was supposed to. And so I think you like a guy like Leggett, who's more in the, he's maybe not as good of a blocker, but he's a guy that can win a lot of, you know, kind of come in and take over that Larry Fitzgerald. Like, you know, we've joked about.
He's kind of like a tight end in a lot of offenses, Fitzgerald.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, kind of come over and take over that role, hopefully in 2018. But he's a guy that you can get on the second day. And there's a lot more, but like legitimately, I haven't had time to watch the guys that aren't going to go early.
I'm totally in that boat too, but like, a player who, you know, I don't know if the Cardinals would go that high at, but OJ Howard really especially since he's been playing in a run first offense where he's been expected to block. He'd be a guy that would fit, I think, perfectly with what Bruce Arians likes to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he is going to be a complete freak of nature. He's supposedly going to destroy the combine run. He's going to be over 250 pounds at 6'6". He's apparently going to run in the high 4.4, low 4.5 range.
That's ridiculous.
So, he's
that body. Look at Darren Fells, like what they love about him athletically and physically. That's OJ Howard, only more skilled than Darren Fells because he's actually played football for a while. Exactly.
And you know, people complain about what he's done or hasn't done, and I agree to an extent, but you got to remember, he like you said, he is a blocking first tight end, unfortunately for them. So you know, he put up 445 yards and only two touchdowns in 2016. But you got to remember, he didn't really get that many passes thrown his way. So he averaged over 12 yards per catch. I mean, that's huge, you know, for a tight end. I don't make this comparison lightly. And so I don't want people to think like, oh, this is what you're going to get, but he's honestly the closest thing to Gronk that I think you're going to get in a player, in that he can, like you said, physically dominate a game in a way that we really don't see very often from the tight end position. And it's one of those things that, you know, another report compares him to Greg Olsen. Well, that hasn't been too bad for the Carolina Panthers. And so, you know, at 13, if you look at it in this instance, and this is the way that I would sell this, if you look at it in the instance that they're going to get a player that is going to start right away at a position of need and improve their position and you know, be a two-way player for them right away, I think it's a slam dunk. It's the fact that it's a tight end that didn't do a ton in the passing game that causes pause for a lot of people. But, you know, I am willing to look over that because I've seen what he can do, you know, when he actually gets the ball thrown to him, which is just, you know, so few and far between. But I think the guy that kind of left his mark on everybody last night, literally and figuratively, was Reuben Foster. And, you know,
that man,
you know, he's evoking the Patrick Willis type comparisons. And, you know, Patrick Willis was the, you know,
one of their best ever.
Yeah. I mean, for the time that he played, he was, you know, a special, special player. You know, whether that's fair or not to Reuben Foster, I don't know, but that's the type of that is what he evokes from people. So that is, you know, that's one of those things that you look at and you go, you know, I'm gonna put that in my back pocket. But, you know, after last night and kind of looking at this class overall, I'm not sure that Foster's a guy that'll be on the board at 13, but I'll tell you this much. If I had my pick of anybody that was not a quarterback, Foster would be the pick.
Imagine Dan Buchanan and Reuben Foster in the same middle of the field?
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Minter's been very good. He's not great, but he's been very good. But you get a guy who's just as big, but more athletic and a bigger hitter. And more impact with the speed that Buchanan has, that is scary stuff. That's potentially, and not to, but I mean, you look back to the linebacker combo where we had Willis and Navarro Bowman. in San Francisco. Could you imagine the playmaker? Even just with the Cardinals, when you had Dansby and Washington in the same backfield, only, yeah, you've got the same sort of potential play from sideline to sideline play with a guy who can also mix it up in the middle.
Exactly. And it's, you know, he's going to be one of those guys. He has the potential to be in the Luke Kuechly, the Bobby Wagner, the, you know, that mold of inside backer that just completely changes the complexion of a team's defense. And at 13, you don't know if he's going to be there, but if we're taking the quarterback out of the equation, that's the guy that over everybody else in this draft, I would take, because I think it is the perfect intersection of need / talent / market improvement of what this team needs in terms of an infusion of just kind of that nasty demeanor. And you saw what he did last night. He legitimately probably could have been ejected twice for targeting, but that's who he is, and that's what he's going to bring to an NFL team. And you know, when it's against your team, you're not very happy about it, but when it's with your team and it doesn't get called, you go, well, you know, they didn't call it on the field. You know, I like a player that plays physical. So
another player, but you know, athletically, a guy that you like the mental side of the game is on the other side in orange, and that's Ben Boulware. Also a very, very heady, very smart player. I don't know what he's in. I haven't watched enough of Clemson to know what he is like athletically, but he's another guy that really impressed me in terms of his smarts on the field. 6'2", 6'2", 235 is what he's listed. I wonder if he's going to be limited athletically. If not, that's another guy. Obviously, he's not first round talent, is he? But if you're looking for at least, you know, your two down back, the two down backer, and there in the middle of Minter was originally going to be.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of who was the kid, Ronald McKinnon, you know, maybe not the sexiest player, but a guy that is always around the ball and always, you know, is going to be that guy that always has like 110 tackles a year. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think he's going to be a mid round guy. He's going to be a special teamer, and he's going to make a lot of football teams over his career, because he's going to be a guy that all these coaches fall in love with. So, I don't know what he would bring for the Cardinals that they don't have in Kevin Minter, outside of, that he would be cheaper. So if that's what you're looking for, I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing.
Is any other player in particular that stood out in terms of the play? I know one of the players that over at DraftWire, Luke Easterling, kind of had it on the radar, and I listed as a guy that might be worth looking at would be Tim Williams over at Alabama, their outside linebacker. Now, he's a little lean in terms of, you know, if you look at what the Cardinals like to do at outside linebacker, would he be a guy that could transition to an inside backer, or is he more of a pure pass rusher who would need to put on a little bit of weight?
He's a pure pass rusher, but I've said before that I think he could be kind of the Alden Smith of this draft in terms of production on field. Like, he can be a guy that gets drafted high, and you know, he may not be the impact on an every down basis, but he'll play, you know, 60% of the snaps and end up with eight to 12 sacks a season, because he's that dynamic of a pass rusher. But I was honestly a little disappointed in his game yesterday. It wasn't what I expected, so we'll see how that turns around. But You know, between him and Jonathan Allen, I think a lot of people expected more from their overall output in the game, but they still have a ton of tape that shows that they're both, you know, probably top 15 players. I'm not as big on Jonathan Allen as a lot of people are. And let's put it this way. Like, I don't think Jonathan Allen's going to go in the top five like he's being projected. If he does, you know, good for him. But like, if he was there at 13 and the Cardinals did not re-sign Calais Campbell, I could see him being an intriguing option. But it wouldn't be like a run to the podium type moment like a lot of people are trying to make him out to be.
Are there any other players in that stood out other than, well, like in either direction, actually?
You know, I wasn't overly impressed with Marlon Humphrey, the corner that's been getting first round talk. You know, I don't like Bama defensive backs. I was actually watching the game with Justin Higdon and we were just talking about that. And it's, you know, we have a group text message with Kyle Posey and during the game, we were just talking about it. It's like, you know, if they win so much with their hands that it's frustrating because, you know, it was kind of the Patrick Peterson thing when he came in the league. Like, didn't he lead the league in pass interference calls?
He would slide a lot his first year.
And it's just, they don't know how to play without their hands and they get into the NFL and then that's an issue. So Humphrey in a negative aspect, I love the Bo Scarborough kid, but I don't know honestly how you take him before day three because he has so many lower leg issues. He broke his leg last night. He's already had an ACL tear. You know, and we all see he's an amazingly physical runner. But he's a guy that you just worry about because can he be a guy that holds up to an NFL load or is he going to be one of those backs that comes in and gets used up in 3 to 5 years and then his career is over. So, and for the Cardinals, obviously it's not a pressing need. So I don't know if you really want to bring in, a guy that could be a potential injury issue, to play behind David Johnson for the next, you know, hopefully 5+ years.
Well, let's move on for the final segment. Coming back on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to actually talk, you know, Cardinals, the actual Cardinals on the roster. We're going to look at some of the position groups. What do the Cardinals need moving ahead in terms of? I think it'll be more general. Do they need to add young players? Do they need to add veterans? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red for our final segment. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and let's talk about the different position groups as we look forward to the offseason. Obviously, free agency is still 2 months away. The draft is even later than that. So we've got a lot of time to talk about, you know, specific players and their contracts, which of those players should come back, which should they re-sign, which should they let go. But let's kind of look at – I'm kind of thinking is in each position group – what type of player do they need to add? Do they need to add a veteran? Do they need to add a young player? Do they need to add someone developmental? And I think we're going to both agree, and everyone would agree, that at quarterback, they need – it's not vital, but it's near that they draft somebody. And I don't think that is – I don't think that based on what I'm hearing from Arians and the talk that they – they really have any interest on any quarterback that might hit the open market or might trade for. They need to draft somebody to hopefully develop in a year or maybe two. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is I think it's got to be a guy that they kind of spend some equity on as opposed to another bargain shopping type guy.
Logan Thomas, Ryan Lindley, yeah, John Skelton. Exactly.
That was kind of that, you know, I told you before we came on here, that was actually the article I wrote for Wednesday morning is that like Arians has a fantastic legacy. Hopefully the post Palmer era doesn't screw it up. And that's what, you know, that's kind of where they're headed is, you know, Palmer's basically a ticking time bomb in that at any moment he could be done because he's going to be 38 in league age this year. So the question becomes, are they prepared? You know, they don't want to get caught like Ken Wisenhunt did. And with Kurt Warner kind of walking away and then you scramble with John Skelton and then, you know, you overpay for Kevin Cobb and, you know, you don't want to do that. Now, I'm not saying force the issue. And I think you would agree with that. You know, don't force the issue. Don't draft a Christian Hackenberg in the second round. But if you like a player at, you know, wherever they drafted when they drafted Deion Buchanan, if you like a Derek Carr that much.
Well, they were at 20 and they took him at 27, I think is what it was.
Yeah, so if you like a Derek Carr enough at 27, just because you have a need, a more pressing 2017 need, doesn't mean that it's going to be the right pick. And I think everybody would agree, you know, Deion Buchanan's a very good player, but obviously hindsight.
Derek Carr.
Yeah, hindsight 2020, you could have potentially the best young quarterback in the NFL. So it's one of those things, you know, don't force it, but, you know, if you're comfortable with a player, if you think DeShone Kizer, if you think Mitch Trubisky, if you think, you know, Deshaun Watson, if you're a Pat Mahomes fan in on day two, if you feel comfortable with one of those guys, you know, don't say, well, we really need a cornerback in the second round this year, so we need to pass on Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, oh, you know, Reuben Foster fell to 13, but so did, you know, DeShone Kizer. We really need an inside linebacker for 2017, so we're going to pass on like that. I just
that would be absurd.
Well, it's just one of those things. Like you have to at some point spend some equity on it. And I know they're paying Palmer good money, but you know, let's be honest, they went bargain shopping, and you know they hit all the garage sales, and they came out with. One, you know, somebody gave, you know, sold them a painting for $5 that ended up being worth, you know, $50,000. And so it was one of those, you know, garage sale finds that you read about on the internet and it worked out, but you can't expect it to happen again. Right.
Right. And if you look at this, look at Bruce Arians' record. Who has he had success for with in terms of quarterbacks? It's always been a top prospect. You know, say what you want. I've said this and I've written about this before. His work and development should be praised more than anything for what he's done with receivers, because the success he's had with quarterbacks have all been top picks, have been top prospects. You know, Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, even Tim Couch. Tim Couch was a top pick. So you look at those guys, in what world have we seen Bruce Arians succeed with the developmental project? We haven't.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and so you almost think that if they're going to look at quarterback, it's got to be round one, maybe round two. At running back, obviously there's no need, at least for the starter. The question then becomes, basically everyone behind him is up in the air. Chris Johnson, free agent, Andre Ellington, free agent, Kerwin Williams is around for another year. The question becomes what do they need to add there? They're Stephon Taylor, free agent. So they have some needs popping up, and one is the, you know, the pass protection, you know, your specific special teams blocker guy that's going to be bigger. Maybe they have that in Elijah Penny, but I don't think they can go into 2017 without some sort of veteran, whether he's going to be their backup or whether he's kind of their back end special teams guy. I think personally, Kerwin Williams might have shown enough that he could be number two back. but you need a more of a special teams ace slash pass blocker, but some sort of veteran to round out the room, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think just re-signing Chris Johnson would be fine because I think you get him on a discount because of his,
the injuries that he had the last couple of years. Exactly, he's now has an injury history. That's official. He went from being super durable to a guy that's been on IR the last 2 years.
Okay, yeah. So, I think you can just bring back Johnson in that room. Like you said, you then have Kerwin Williams as, running back two. If Johnson's healthy, he's in the discussion for running back two. You have Elijah Penny as your young guy, but then you special teams guy. Williams is a special teams guy. And then you have Johnson as...
Except don't let him be punt protector.
Exactly.
don't let him do that.
Or somebody work it, like something. But yeah.
Well, his issue is just fine. Both the times that there were punt blocks is because he was in there because Alex Okafor got hurt and then because Tony Jefferson got hurt. And Kerwin Williams just isn't big enough. What is he, 5'10", 180 or something like 5'10", 190? Going in against instead of, Okafor, who was in there the first time, who was 6'4", 260. Yeah, that's just unfair. That was unfortunate. But he carved out a role in special teams, in coverage, which he hadn't had before, which I find interesting. But I whether it's Chris Johnson or someone else, I want to make sure that there's some veteran in the room, especially because you still want someone to help mold David Johnson in. And that's probably a very understated thing, is just how – critical Chris Johnson has been for David Johnson's development because of the basically the street cred that he has in that. Because one, he's a great guy. He's just a nice guy. Two, he's a tireless worker, and he really changed the running back room last year when he was added.
Exactly. So I'm fine with Johnson being the veteran in the room and kind of Ellington being the guy that's done. You're obviously going to get an undrafted free agent or a veteran as your fifth guy for the offseason and preseason. Maybe he has a Elijah Penny like rise and is a guy that they look at as a practice squad, back into the roster type. But I think if Johnson's the guy you bring back, your top three are in good position.
Look at receiver. This is going to be real interesting because a lot of it depends on Larry Fitzgerald. Obviously, even if Larry Fitzgerald comes back, then you're relying on a John Brown, J.J. Nelson. And at this point, I kind of count the two of them as one player. Because of, Nelson's frame makes it difficult to believe that he can be a number two receiver, and play 90% of the snaps. John Brown and his illness, who knows if he'll be. So I see almost the two of them as one player. Jerron Brown's going to be coming back from an ACL. They need something. Now, in fairness, so I want them to get somebody in free agency. They need to have some sort of, four to 8 year veteran that they add that's got some production. Names that come, Kenny Britt, we were talking off the air. Kenny Britt, I think, would be a fantastic addition. He'll probably be way too expensive. That's more for a different show. But they need someone to fill the Michael Floyd role. Someone who can go up and get the ball, who's got some size and speed to complement the little fast guys of John Brown and J.J. Nelson, and then, Fitz is the glorified tight end. Now, if Fitz leaves, that you then have really big hole to fill there at receiver, because not only do you need to fill the physical blocking slot receiver, you also need to fill the downfield threat as well.
Yeah,
and we know that Aaron's. We know is going to draft a receiver.
Exactly,
it's not going to be early.
The guy I want more than any player in this draft is Taywan Taylor out of Western Kentucky. He's I've seen him on like the fan speak stuff. Like he's a prospect in the, like the 100 plus range, but based on what people I've talked to and what I've read on these interwebs. So he's listed at, I think 6'1" and like 220. He's like Anquan Boldin's size. But he's allegedly going to run in the 4.3s.
Oh my gosh.
And then he's allegedly going to have a like a 40-inch vertical leap, and then like be able to broad jump like 140 inches or something crazy like that. So he's going to test as a complete freak of nature athlete. Yeah, they have him at 6 foot and 200 pounds. The low end's going to be 4.3. His mid 40 times 4.39. So, you know, he's the guy that's the guy I would love to have in Arizona, coming off this season. I think he's the perfect blend of everything that they need at the wide receiver position, and he allows them to kind of, like you said, it allows them to blend the role of Nelson and Brown, but also start to prepare for the Fitz departure.
At tight end, they've got Jermaine Gresham up for, you know, whatever happens there, that's going to be an interesting position because we don't know that. I think we've heard that they want Gresham back. They need a veteran there. They probably need to draft someone or bring someone in. You don't really see, I mean, the Troy Nicholas experience is perhaps done. Maybe he cracks the roster one more time, but the dude can't stay healthy. They need someone like Gresham if they don't keep Gresham, because I don't think Darren Fells is quite there. And Gresham turned out to be a very, very nice addition. So they need someone like him if it's not him. And they probably need to continue to, you know, try to add some youth to the room. And I wouldn't, you know, what I wouldn't mind seeing, I kind of would like to see is, you know, if you look back at those Pittsburgh teams, kind of the older veteran blocking tight end, like a Matt Spaeth, back when he was there, the Matt Spaeth of the Heath Miller, that sort of player I'd love to add, sort of a veteran guy as well. You're on mute, I think, unless you're not connected.
No, I muted myself. Dang it. I just was telling you all the guys that were available that could do that. Red Ellison from Minnesota is that, you know, that blocking tight end. The kid that actually caught the absurd fourth down play from Detroit, Matthew Mulligan's available. An interesting one to me would be Luke Wilson out of Seattle's available.
Ooh.
So, you know, he's a little more dynamic than those other two guys. And then if you wanted to go, you know, big game hunting, Martellus Bennett's available. You know, he's probably one of the top five tight ends in the NFL. I don't know if he's an attainable one. So, you know, there is some, you have Jack Doyle from Indianapolis had a good season. He's available. So there are a lot of variety of tight ends available this coming off season. And, you know, there's a kid, I want to get it right. I can't remember. Justin and I literally just talked about him last weekend, or this Monday. Hold on, I want to make sure I get this right. What is his name? Michael Roberts. I believe that's the kid. Hold on, let me make sure. He's the tight end from Toledo. He is listed at 6'6", 6'6" or 6'7". Oh, 6'4". Sorry, he's only 6'4", but he's 270 pounds, and he caught like 16 touchdowns this year, and he only had like 35 catches all season. He has this like absurd ability. Yeah, he had 45 catches and 16 of them were touchdowns this year. So he has this just absurd ability to catch the ball in the red zone. And he'll be a day two, maybe an early day three type. So maybe you have that option too, if you can bring Gresham back for another year and then draft a guy like that. So
tight end, actually not tight end, offensive line. That's an interesting thing because, you know, with how they play, you know, depth isn't really an issue. They've got lots of young depth. There's talent there. They're set at left guard at least for another year. They're set at tackle. The question is, what's going to happen at center? I don't think they're not going to – they want to bring back A.Q. Shipley. Evan Bame will be in the mix there, and he might actually be their right guard. So obviously for me, if I'm looking for something to add, I want to make sure that there are two players that are starting caliber at center and at guard, but aren't necessarily must be starters. It would be nice to get a right guard, depending on the price. And that's in terms of salary cap management. You hope that some of these guys take the next step. Shipley proved he can be a starting center and he can handle it. How pricey does that make him? That's one thing. But, you know, with the money that they've invested in Veldheer and Iupati and what they, you know, they paid Evan Mathis this year, ideally what you can hope is that you bring in someone who Ted Larson-ish, that sort of player who's versatile, who can start but doesn't have to start. That way you don't have an unhappy player if Evan Bame turns out to be ready to play and play well on Sundays, either at center or at guard.
Yeah, and the kid I like, if they're going to draft somebody, is the kid out of University of Indiana, I guess. I don't know how that goes. You know, his name's Dan Feeney. In the fan speak mock I did, he was available in the second round. I think he's a guy that it's one of those like, I don't want to draft this guy, but man, he is going to lock down that guard position for the next decade. And it's one of those things too, like you draft a guy. You know, I would not advocate for him at 13, but if he came back around at 45 and was available, I'd have a hard time not making that call. And then, you know, you have a right guard for 2017, but then maybe you have a left guard for 2018. If Mr. Iupati again continues to struggle to stay healthy and be productive. And so, you know, you're always looking at 2017, the year you're drafting for, but also with an eye towards the future. And you just hope that they don't go all, you know, 2016 draft class on you and not really give you any notion of whether or not they're going to be able to play. So, you know, I don't know if you can bring in a veteran. I think Earl Watford probably gone at this point. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree. And he's priced himself out because they feel comfortable with the tackles that they've got. But, you know, if your reserve tackle, you've got John Wetzel. What they have in Cole Turner.
He might be restricted, but I know he's a free agent. Wetzel's a free agent. I just looked it up last night. So, you know, do they – you know, I think he's going to be back because I don't think that he's going to be like a commodity or anything. But, yeah, you know, I don't know. What do they do? He's a restricted free agent. So they Well, how does that work? I don't even remember, if we're being completely honest.
Well, restricted, if they tender him, it would be like $1.7 million. And since he was, I think he was a seventh rounder, so they'd get same round, you know, same round compensation if they tagged him, or they can tag. Yeah.
Oh, no, he's
how that works.
He's an ERFA. I don't know
what that means. Yeah, I thought they had him. I thought he was under control for another season.
So what is that?
So that's good. So he'll be back.
Okay.
That just means it just means he's not under contract. That they didn't sign him to through the full year. That just means if the Cardinals want him back, he's going to be back because he can't go anywhere else unless they don't
want him back.
Give him a contract. Yeah. Defensive line. It's an interesting mix because they have talent there. There's talent and there's young talent. The question is, who's going to be the veteran there? Is it going to be, is Frosty Rucker going to be back? Is Calais Campbell will be back? Corey Peters will be there. Is he enough of a veteran leadership in there? Because it sounds like Bruce Arians believes I asked him about Rodney Gunter, and he says he's been disruptive, and you know, if he could go from 16 to 40 snaps and you wouldn't miss anything. So it sounds like to me that they're ready for Gunter to take over. But you lose Rucker, and if you lose Campbell, then you've lost a ton of leadership in that room. And Peters is solid as a leader. But with all that youth, I think you need to add somebody.
Yeah, I agree. I think
– And drafting someone, go for it, because you can never have enough good defensive linemen.
Yeah, not early, but yeah, like I'm with you there. But I think maybe – like I just think Campbell's got to be your priority. Did you see the – thing that the guy from Over the Cap tweeted out this week? He tweeted out that he thinks Campbell's going to get about $8 million a year. So
you can do that.
If you're the Cardinals, you got to offer him what, 324 with like half of that guaranteed, right? Like you have to, I don't know. Like I don't know. Like I have a hard time saying, oh, the, you know, second best player on our defense, good luck. We're going to replace you with the guy that played 45 snaps this year. And hope it all works out. You know, like I have a hard time with that. But I also get that finances are limited and they have to make tough calls. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think they got to bring back Campbell. If they don't bring back Campbell, I think you got to at least pony up for. And this is not a shot at Frosty Rucker, but he became just a guy this year. Like, he wasn't making impact plays anymore. And I get his impact on the locker room, but I think at that point you have to maybe go out and find a vet. And I don't even know any, honestly, but like,
I haven't looked at anything yet. But
like, you have to find some type of veteran that can play.
On the linebacker core, the linebacking core, you've got, if you look for the first time,
incredibly
thin. Outside and you don't have to worry about the outside linebackers. You can draft someone to develop, or even someone who's impactful. But there's no need this year. You need depth. You need depth behind Golden. You need depth behind Jones. But at least at outside linebacker, there's no need to go find, like, force a pick that way. You want to bring someone in. It can be anybody, really. Ideally, you can draft someone. But an inside backer, if Kevin Minter doesn't come back, that's a big hole.
Well, and I think it's still the same with what's his name, Chandler Jones. Like, we all assume something's going to get done, right? Like, we all assume.
Like he'll be at least a Cardinal for another year. He'll at least be franchised. Which, you know, interestingly enough, you know, if they were able to land a big time edge player at the top of the draft,
yeah, and that's why. Exactly. That's why, I think a Tim Williams is a viable pick at 13, even though, like you said, it's not necessarily a need. But all of a sudden, then you have leverage as the Cardinals, right? Like,
and then you could let Jones walk and not have to pay him a gazillion dollars.
Exactly. So, you know, I think there's a lot of choices they can make out there. But they got to find they have to make a decision on how they're going to attack this. I think you can't go in to the draft with Jones on the franchise tag and Minter unsigned. Like, one of those guys has to be signed to a long-term contract. So you give yourself, like you said, those options. Then all of a sudden you have flexibility. You don't want to have Jones, like I said, you don't want to have Minter having signed in, you know, New York, for 2 years and $6 million. And then Jones on a franchise tag. And then you're like, well, we've got all these talented corners there, but my goodness, we're going to be lining up C.O. Moore as our starting linebacker this year. And Chandler Jones is threatening to hold out for the entire year. So, I guess we're going to reach here at 13 for somebody else. So, like, that's what you don't want to be at. You want to be in a position where you go, oh, well, we signed, you know, Kevin Minter for 2 years, $6 million. And you know, Jones has signed his franchise tag, or, you know, the Cardinals made a splash and got him for five for 75. And, you know, now all of a sudden they have all the freedom in the world to do whatever they want. They draft, you know, they can draft a Tim Williams to replace Marcus Golden in 2 years. Cause then you don't, you know, you can't afford to sign Marcus Golden cause you just paid Chandler Jones, but now you have Marcus Golden's replacement in house for three seasons. Like, it gives you a dynamic that you need to have. But yeah, you got it. I think you have to sign one of the guys that is a free agent or bring in a similar player in terms of skill and ability, but you can't go in to the draft with an unknown, because then I feel like it forces them to make decisions.
At quarterback and safety, you know, they don't seem to think that they're that much of a pickle at corner. If they bring back Marcus Cooper and you've got Brandon Williams and you got Justin Bethel, you're kind of okay. You're kind of okay at corner, with potentially being fine at corner. But at safety, you lose DJ Swearinger, you lose Tony Jefferson, then you've got Tyrann Mathieu and Tyvon Branch. You can't go into 2017 with only those two. So you have to sign somebody in free agency, and you have to look to the future in the draft. And maybe Harlan Miller's that guy. I don't know if they see him long-term as a safety. He's a guy who could play safety, but I don't know if he projects necessarily. And maybe he did, because his speed wasn't high end at corner. That's one of the biggest knocks on him was his straight line speed. So, you know, the safety is the place where you have to get somebody. So they have to bring back one of the two guys, Jefferson or Swearinger, or they have to sign someone else. Even if it's for depth to say, okay, we are going to start Branch and Mathieu. But you have to do something behind that. You have to have someone other than rookies and undrafted guys.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think you got to bring back. I wrote about it I wrote about it the last day or so. But I think you have to bring back one of Branch, or sorry, not Branch, of Jefferson or Swearinger. I've said Swearinger. I think he's more versatile and cheaper. I'm not saying he's better. I just think he's more versatile and cheaper than what they'll get Jefferson at. And so I think that would be my pick for that. But you have, like you said, you got to bring one of them back. And then, you know, I think again, in this draft class, you got guys like Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker that will be available in the first round at pick 13 that you can get by with one of those guys on a 2 year deal. Cause then, you know, they go from being a starter for a season or half a season in 2006 or 17 to being your, you know, third safety on the field in half of 2017 or all of 2018. So, you know, if you get one of those guys for 2 years and 9 or 10 million, and then you're able to draft a guy that can come in and compete, I think that's not a bad way to attack it. So it's just, you know, there's a lot of different ways to build this roster. I think the obvious positions are obvious. I think the one question, and you and I couldn't really answer it, is what do they do along the offensive line? Can they continue to invest high picks and big money, or do they at some point have to expect these guys to all stay healthy and play 16 games up to their draft position or contracts? Because that's the one thing we haven't seen yet, is that these guys all put together 16 cohesive games on the offensive line.
And then lastly, on special teams, you know, you think maybe that they've addressed the punter situation. The guys that they have, that's probably who they're going to roll with. I'm not saying that solves the problem. At kicker, obviously, you know, Catanzaro, he's a restricted free agent. If you re-sign him, you still, I believe fully that they have to do more than the camp body. They need to bring in an established kicker to compete with them. And that long snapper, who knows, Brewer, I guess, can do it. But it's, you know, just don't try the undrafted rookie guy this year. Probably not. Yeah. In this case, please.
Exactly. Don't, that's the thing is, you know, I know you're a homer for ASU, so you're going to say Zane Gonzalez, but like, I wouldn't even think that would be a bad idea. Like, obviously you're going to get that fifth round compensatory pick. So like, if he's available at the back end of the fifth round, like, you know, shoot your shot, like bring in a guy
and he's, you know, he's not an established kicker in the NFL, but he is the, you know, best kicker ever, maybe in college football history. I don't know.
So, yeah, exactly. So I think that's one of the things you got to do.
All right. And that should wrap it up. We, you know, we went longer than we probably should have on an off-season show. We're trying to get these cut down for you guys. One, and since Seth's up later than he probably should be. But that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We've talked playoffs. We've talked, you know, Clemson and Alabama prospects. And we've talked about needs at each particular position. We'll be back again next week for more talk. We'll probably look forward. We might start looking at, you know, I think we'll start talking about specific players. Should they come back? Who of their free agent? Who should they re-sign and who should they let go? That sounds like what we might want to do next week. How close they are. But again, this is the latest edition of Rise Up Sea Red. You can find us on lots of places. We're on cardswire.com. That's my site. RevengeOfTheBirds.com. That's his site. You can find us on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. On Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. We're hosted on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much anywhere where you can find awesome podcasts like ours. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and go Cardinals.